Welcome to a new episode of Africa with André, where we celebrate Africa one story at a time.
It's a place where I would say you put your soul together, you know?
Welcome back to Angola. In the first episode 3 weeks ago, you met some of our tourism colleagues, and I told you about the history, the cultures, and the two largest cities in the country, Luanda and Lubango. Today, we're going to chat about some of the places that we visited when we were there. Until recently, there was very little information online about things to see and do in Angola, simply because there was almost no tourism. This is slowly changing. You can find some blog entries from intrepid travelers, a few YouTube videos, and our guide and organizer on the ground, João, is putting more and more information online. It's his voice that you heard at the start today. You'll meet João a little bit later in the episode. Fact is, Angola is for explorers and adventurers, those who want to discover a country that is still authentic and unspoiled. In the previous episode, I asked two of my colleagues what their expectations of Angola were before they traveled. Let's hear what they had to say after their trip. I asked Anke if there was anything that surprised her.
Angola hat mich total überrascht, und das auf mehreren Ebenen.
Yes, the country surprised me on several levels. Angola's rich culture is visible in everyday life, in the language, in the music, in the art, in the way people see themselves. If you play music anywhere, everyone starts moving. The diversity of the landscape was also very impressive, from the coastal areas to the lunar landscapes, the tropical regions, mountains, and the waterfalls. To be honest, I didn't expect the country to have so many different faces.
Frank Heller works for a tour operator, and I asked him how he liked the trip and what his three highlights were.
Ich versuche es am besten in Adjektive zu fassen.
I'll sum it up in adjectives. Angola was surprising, exciting, pleasant, very friendly and welcoming, simply beautiful. It was just a great trip. My first highlight was the two cities of Luanda and Lubango. Both large, both very different in their own way. Secondly, it was the nature, the landscapes, and especially the waterfalls, which are really impressive. And last but not least, and perhaps it should have been in first place, were the people we met. Open, friendly, peaceful, unbiased, and sorry for pointing this out, but not yet spoiled by tourism. This means that you can walk around the streets normally and are not looked on as a stranger.
So, with that in mind, I want to take you to some of the sites that we visited. First off, the Serra da Leba Mountain Pass. For that, we need to go straight back to the second largest city in Angola, Lubango. It's located about 180 kilometers inland in the south of the country. If you were to drive to Lubango from the beach, about 40 kilometers before you reach the city, you would snake up the escarpment of the Serra da Leba mountain range on a very impressive road that would not be out of place in Switzerland. With its famous hairpin bends twisting dramatically up the cliffs, this mountain pass offers jaw-dropping views of valleys and mountains that stretch as far as the eye can see. This important road was built in the 70s and connects the ocean and deserts of the Namibe province at the coast with Lubango in the inland Huila province, climbing to over 1,800 meters above sea level. Fun fact, the road is also featured on the 2,000 Kwanza banknote. In fact, Angola's banknotes double as a sightseeing checklist, if you will. They feature several must-see spots, including Tundavala and Pedras Negras. So, technically, every time you pay for lunch, you're holding a little travel brochure in your hands. And while we're talking about roads, I was really pleasantly surprised. For some reason, I thought the roads would not be good. And yes, we did have some very bumpy stretches, but that was mainly when we were driving on the temporary road next to a new, wider road being built. Generally speaking, the roads were good. Second stop, Tundavala. When I was preparing for this trip, one destination that kept coming up in YouTube videos and some articles was the Fenda Tundavala, or the Tundavala Gorge, which is about 20 kilometers outside of Lubango. The photos I kept seeing showed a gap in the rocks at the edge of an escarpment with a view into the distance below. I'll be honest, I was not convinced. What's so special about a gap in a rock? Even when we were already arriving at the viewpoint, my inner skeptic kept asking me, why is this such an important spot to visit? But wow, was I wrong. It didn't take long for my jaw to drop and for me to understand just how much photos don't do it justice, cannot do it justice. Imagine standing at the edge of a 1 kilometer high mountain, only a small stone wall between you and a sheer drop down into the valley. Below you are some shrubs growing out of the cliff, there's a town at the base of the mountain, and a view into the distance that just does not end. On a clear day, you can apparently see all the way to the Atlantic Ocean. We didn't get to see that though. It did remind me a little bit of being in Tanzania at the edge of the Great Rift Valley. The sheer drop, not the Atlantic Ocean, of course. And that gap in the rocks that I kept seeing in the pictures. It's hard to describe how thrilling it was to finally stand on these big boulders with trees growing alongside and in between them and having a huge gorge tapering off into the side of the mountain. I think a few of my fellow travelers were a little worried about me bouncing from rock to rock with excitement. Sorry about that, guys. This area of Tundavala is home to the Mwila tribe. We had the opportunity to buy homemade wooden spoons and woven baskets from them, because I really do prefer to bring back souvenirs that are locally made and have some sort of a purpose. Suffice it to say, Tundavala was an unexpected highlight of the trip for me. Third stop, the Botanical Gardens. Because we were on a tight 6-day schedule, we found ourselves driving longer distances in a day than a regular visitor would on a more leisurely holiday. One example of that is the day when we left Luanda and had to drive 6 hours to get to the Kalandula waterfalls, something I was really, really looking forward to see. We had a police escort that day, not because it was dangerous or anything, but because the tourism ministry and the local governors were so happy for our visit and wanted to make sure that everything was going well. At the halfway mark, it was planned to visit the botanical garden in the town of Ndalatando, which is the capital of the Kwanza Norte province. Again, I'd looked for information online, but didn't really find much about Angola's only botanical garden. I'll admit, it takes quite a lot for a botanical garden to excite me, so I was wondering whether this was actually all going to be worth it. Short answer, yes. Longer answer, it turned out well in the end. Because as we arrived in Ndalatando, it was announced that the governor of the province wanted to meet us, to personally welcome us, and then show us around the botanical garden. We felt honored to be invited into his boardroom and to be welcomed to the province and the city. My heart sank though when I heard that he was also inviting us to stay for lunch, because I really didn't want to miss seeing the waterfalls, and we still had a 3-hour drive, and it gets dark around 6 o'clock when we're nearish the equator. An entourage of 12 vehicles then headed to the botanical garden, the governor's vehicle, his security detail, the press, and our bus. And he walked us through the gardens with a translator telling us about his pride and joy. These gardens really were completely different to what I expected. It's a huge piece of land with dense, tall vegetation lining the path from the entrance down to the river. Originally, it was established as a Portuguese research station. Today, they house an impressive collection of bamboo, rubber, fig trees, and other indigenous plants. Although the gardens could use some TLC, it plays a very important role in local and international science. And we were promised that our clients would soon be able to read the names of the plants on signs in English. But the best part was when we saw firsthand that the gardens are used by the general public as well. People come here with their friends and family to play along the river, or to take a loved one for a romantic picnic next to the big old trees. At one point, we heard the sound of a group of people singing and then found ourselves in the middle of a group of young people worshipping, dancing in the gardens and singing out affirmations to each other. That really was a beautiful moment. And despite my concern about whether we would make it to the waterfalls on time, I'm glad that we visited the gardens. The governor even found us some examples of the unique porcelain roses that are endemic to this part of the country. Have a look in the show notes for a link to see these beautiful flowers. The waterfall. Like I said, it all worked out well in the end, and we did make it to the waterfall in time to see them in daylight. The Kalandula waterfalls are on the Lukala River and are the second largest waterfall in Africa after the Victoria Falls. Here's what our colleague Susanna had to say about visiting the falls.
They are really, really big, really impressive, and nearly no one there. When you travel around the world to big waterfalls, there would be many, many tourists, hundreds or thousands, with all the infrastructure around it, and there is just nothing. There is people there sitting around the river and enjoying the evening light, having a beer or something to eat, and just, yeah, watch this beautiful waterfall. So if you go there as a tourist, you can have it nearly for your own.
The falls are 100 meters high and about 400 meters wide, so a similar height to the Victoria Falls, but a little narrower. But how else do the two falls differ? What I really like in Angola is that you can see the entire width of the waterfall from the viewing point. The Victoria Falls plunge into a very narrow gorge with impressive force, and there is a winding path along the gorge with great views onto parts of them, but you only really see the whole wall of water from a helicopter or an airplane. Secondly, I like to describe the Kalandula Falls as having more texture. It's not one flat wall of water coming down, but some bits are going faster, some more powerfully, and some bits of water seemingly hanging like threads from a small overhang. The area in front of the falls then opens up into a big space where the river gently flows away. And lastly, it was so calm. The walk from the car to the edge of the falls and the viewing point takes you over boulders that separate small pools of water formed by the river. As Ozana said, this is where the locals spend their Saturday afternoon with a beer to cool off, watching their children splash in the water and squeal with joy. It was wonderful to see them enjoying the area around the falls, almost oblivious to the fact that this visitor was almost squealing with delight inside at the chance to finally see the waterfall. Sadly, we didn't have time to walk down to the base with a local guide, but I do need to leave something for next time. And sure, of course, we all want to have more tourists visiting Angola and this waterfall in particular. And that will change some things, but I genuinely hope that any development will allow the local community to continue to enjoy their space there. We've seen the opposite happen too often around the world. That evening, we stayed at a lodge about 1 hour away from the falls. There are not yet that many hotels or lodges in the area, but this one had a lovely spacious room and delicious food. While we were at that hotel, I had a conversation with our guide and co-organizer of the trip, João. He is passionate about making sure the world knows about Angola. Please meet João.
Yeah, my name is João Marcolino Garcia. Thank you so much for you guys coming down here and seeing our country.
We are traveling as a group of German tour operators and travel agents. You are fluent in German, which is one of the reasons that you work closely with the German market. Tell us a little bit about your history, you living in Germany and coming back to start a tourism company.
I was born here in Angola. I was raised in Germany. I went to Germany in 1985 till 1990. And then we moved from Berlin to Angola back because of the wall. I did my training in Germany. And in 2013, I went back to Angola.
What made you start a tourism company when you came back here?
What made us start the company is just like there was a huge lack of information about Angola. When we searched the internet, there is a prison in the US that it's called Angola, you know, and that's actually the most information that you found. And I put that as an aim, as a goal, saying that it can't be possible that my country is being actually put together like a prison.
Yeah.
So we started putting information about Angola on Facebook. It was more like as an information portal, you know. And then all of a sudden we were receiving requests on that website. And we were just like, damn, what's going on here? You know, people are really showing interest for our country. We just started the company actually out of curiosity and it became our business.
Yeah. One of the things that visitors need to experience is the culture of the country. And the music plays a big role in that. Kizomba and Semba are dances and music that are typically Angolan. They have influenced the Samba in Brazil as well. How can I, as a visitor, experience Kizomba and Semba?
Well, you know, talking about Angolan music, you're talking about our culture. And we express music as a way of our living. Samba, if you put together samba and samba, they all sound similar. The way you dance samba is almost the way you dance samba, just with a lot of vibe, but the expression of samba, you get your partner dancing next to you and you express the music through your soul and through both of you guys. Samba, you can learn everywhere in the clubs, outside, in house parties, everywhere you can dance. You have very easy access to learn. In Luanda, we have at the Marginal a place where you can learn to dance Kizomba, you know, and having a place like this free of entrance for everyone, it's an amazing thing. A lot of people want to learn it.
Another big part of the culture in Angola is the carnival, which a lot of people know from Brazil, which also takes place in Angola in February. Similar question to the music. How would I, as a visitor to the country, experience the carnival?
Yeah, actually, it's very easy to experience the carnival. If you're here at carnival time, you will listen to the music. You won't keep your legs still, you know, because that music, that vibe will definitely take you into the hotspot where everybody is going to be. There is a similarity between the carnival in Angola and carnival in Brazil. The color you see in Brazil is the same colors you see here. It's very bright. Everyone is there. Everyone has a positive vibe. That energy you have at that time, it's amazing. Everyone is bringing that positive energy in one spot.
There's parties on every street corner during that time, parades.
Everywhere. Everywhere you look at, you'll see people bouncing and dancing.
And February is a good time to travel to Angola, right?
100%, yes. Since I'm doing this kind of tours, since we took Carnival into our agenda, we've never faced any rainy days on Carnival, to be honest.
I want to talk about Queen Nzinga. She had a kingdom in part of the inland part of Angola almost 500 years ago. There's a statue to her in Luanda. There's a Netflix series about her that came out recently. She fought against the Portuguese occupation at the time and against slavery. What role does Queen Nzinga play in Angola still now?
She plays a big role in our culture. She plays a big role in our everyday life because she is the big lady in Angola. The thing is, we have our mothers as a big player role. We have our grandmoms as a big player roles. Every kid, everyone, doesn't matter if you're a boy or a girl, you know, if you have any issue, if you have any problem, you would definitely go first to your mama, to your grandma, because they're going to solve the problem before and then they're going to ask you what happened. And this is how we see the situation. We see her as the big mom, as the big role in our culture. She is so integrated in our culture.
So she was almost like the protector of the people.
Definitely, yes.
I like questions about favorites. So which is your favorite place in Angola?
It's definitely a very bad question because you're going to bring me in trouble with other nice places, you know. My favorite ones are really Baía dos Tigres and Pedras Negras do Pungandongo. Baía dos Tigres is because mainly because of the way to get there. It's a unique feeling, you know. Once you know you are going and you know where it is and how to get there, you get excited, man. It's like you are a little kid. Tomorrow you're going to get candies, you know.
Yeah.
It's amazing. The driving over there. You have the dunes on your left side. You have the Atlantic Ocean on your right side. And you have a small path that you have to go through. And sometimes the tides defines your way if you can go or not go. Man, that's crazy. That's amazing.
Sounds dramatic with the dunes meeting on the ocean.
Definitely.
Sorry, and that's in the south of Angola.
Exactly, yeah. That's in Namibe, in the southern area of Angola.
And then your second was Pedras Negras. Why is that a special place for you?
It's a place where I would say you put your soul together, you know. Once I went there and I met choral ladies. They were up in the Pedras Negras and they were singing. All the choral voices, you were very far away. You could hear them and I was curious. What's that? I was tired when I came up there and I sat down and I felt like I'm in a dream or something. I went there with a lady. That lady started to meditate. Same time we came up there, she started to meditate and she told me, João, those were the best 20 minutes ever of my life.
Wow.
And that's crazy. When you do tours, when you do what we do here, having that feedback, that moment, it's like, you know, you made it. That's why we love it.
Last question. Music plays a big role. Give me the name of one or two Angolan musicians that we should listen to.
That's really mean when you have so many good singers and you're telling me to pick.
We have to start somewhere.
Okay, I love Paulo Flores and I love Yuri da Cunha, you know, so definitely those are my favorite ones.
The Baía dos Tigres that João mentions is in the same area where the Atlantic meets the dunes that Irene spoke about in the last episode. It sounds incredible and is something I'll need to include on my next visit. João also mentioned the Pedras Negras, or the Black Rocks of Punguandongo, which is the last place I want to tell you about. While we didn't have a choir singing when we were there, it was wonderful to visit these majestic boulders. Some of them are as tall as 200 meters. We first saw them from a distance while we were on the main road, where they looked like a collection of big boulders placed in a line on the horizon. But then our guide took us directly up to and along the boulders, driving in between them into a clearing where there is a small village. And from there, we walked up to the top of one of them. I think it took about 20 minutes or so. While we were there, I took so many photos to try and capture the view, the size of the boulders, the vegetation on them, and the black streaks where water flows down the sides after the rains. But eventually I put my camera away, sat down, and just soaked up the view and the silence. It was a spot where I felt I could recharge. We spoke about Queen Nzinga in the last episode, and this is an area that was strategically important to her during her reign. There are even some footprints imprinted in the stone between the rocks that have been attributed to Queen Nzinga and her father. All in all, Angola really impressed me. The friendly people and the many things to see and do and the landscape. The vegetation is incredibly diverse, which is not really surprising for a country of this size. Grasslands, dunes, jungle, beaches and baobabs. So many baobabs. I suggest that at the moment it is best to travel with a guide. They'll help you navigate the infrastructure. The signage in most museums, for example, is only in Portuguese, and some sites, like Pedras Negras, have no information boards at all yet. We had several conversations with tourism decision makers where we shared our professional input with them on what we feel would help develop the needed infrastructure. And it's great to see how excited the Angolans are to showcase their country to the world. We chatted to the Minister of Tourism, Marcio Daniel, about his vision and plans for Angola. Our colleague Hannah Kleber of the Kleber Group tells us what he had to say.
In 10 years, we envision Angola as a leading and sustainable tourism destination, a country known for its pristine natural beauty, rich cultural heritage, and warm hospitality. We are working towards becoming a hub for ecotourism, cultural immersion, and adventure travel, all while preserving the environment, empowering local communities, and create thousands of jobs. Infrastructure is the key to our vision. We are prioritizing multilingual signage and accessibility. We are also expanding regional airports and upgrading key roads to tourist destinations.
Why should someone visit Angola?
Our slogan, "The Rhythm of Life," sums up the fusion of African rhythm and Portuguese flavor you won't find anywhere else in the world. Angola is for travelers who want to explore, who are looking for something real, with depth.
When asked what his favorite place is, he had this beautiful comment about the Calandula Falls.
The sheer scale and power of the falls, surrounded by lush forest, are unforgettable. It's a place of peace and awe that still feels like a secret.
As we near the end of this episode, I want to leave you with a few final comments from my fellow travelers. I asked Susanna how she liked Angola as a travel destination.
I really like to travel in Angola. It's a very fascinating and beautiful country. I didn't know much about it, so it was very impressive to see all the beautiful different landscapes, waterfalls, high mountains, green landscapes with all kinds of fruits, and then all these nice people we met, and big cities and small towns, and yeah, just to get an impression what this country has to offer was, for me, an adventure. I really love being there and just see how the people live there and what they're doing in tourism now. They really want to get on with it.
Anke added the following.
Angola doesn't reveal itself at first glance. You have to be open. You have to want to discover the country and go with the flow. Then you'll be completely surprised by the sounds, the stories, the colours, and also simply by the depth that the country has to offer. Angola simply cannot be compared to other countries I have seen in Africa. Angola has its own DNA, its own rhythm in its blood, and the country is still so raw and unspoiled.
I asked Frank what his favorite experience was.
The best experiences were primarily the encounters with people. Some of our group ended up at a music festival in Lubango late one evening, which wasn't planned. And there we met some young Angolans, modern and not much different from young people in Europe. That was a great experience, as was a similar trip into Luanda's nightlife. Not the posh nightlife, but that of the more modest population, who also welcomed us warmly and without prejudice and ended up dancing with us in the street.
And lastly, how does Angola compare to other countries in the region?
Angola is, of course, a typical African country, yet it has its own character and differs from its neighbors in southern Africa. For me, Angola is a sleeping giant that is just beginning to awake. I see great potential in tourism, and I very much hope that Angola will be able to preserve its authenticity, its originality, and its uncompromising openness.
As my episodes normally end with favorites, I'm going to share one of my own. When I went for a jog on the promenade in Luanda before our first workshop, I was surprised to find a large statue of what looked like a stylized version of Rodin's sculpture of The Thinker. I admired it, I photographed it, but I didn't give it much more thought. Imagine my surprise then when barely 2 hours later, Irene, whom you met in episode 1, gave me a gift of a small wooden version of the selfsame statue. She told us that it's called O Pensador, which also means the thinker, and that it's actually a national symbol in Angola. The statue originates from the Chokwe tribe in the northeast of present-day Angola and represents the figure of a wise elder who can be male or female. We were told that this symbol has become even more important after the end of the Civil War to remind everyone that Angolans need wise and thoughtful leaders. After this discussion, I started noticing them everywhere, including on the banknotes. The statues brought a smile to my face every time, just as the one we now have at home does too. And that brings me to the end of episode 2 of our Angolan adventure. At this point, I want to say a big thank you to the Ministry of Tourism in Angola, the Kleber Group, the tour operator Diamir, the ASR Association of Independent Travel Companies in Germany, and the local travel company Pure and Authentic Tourism Angola for putting this wonderful eye-opening trip together. I hope you enjoyed hearing about the natural beauty, the music, culture, and the Pensador, and that you might consider including a visit to Angola in the future. I know that each one of us is impressed and looking forward to promoting travel to Angola. You can find some photos of our trip on my Instagram page, Africa with Andre. I've put a link in the show notes, and I look forward to your comments and questions. Till the next time.